Sonali Dhiraniagala's memoir, Wave, is a harrowing account of how she lost her parents, husband, and two young sons when a tsunami struck Sri Lanka on December 26, 2004. The book, unflinching, beautifully written, and very powerful, is about how she's grappled with her enormous grief. It was chosen as one of the 10 best books of 2013 by the New York Times, and it's now available in paperback from Vintage. It was the Leonard Lopez Show Book Club's February selection. I'm very pleased that it has brought her to our show today. Welcome.
Thank you, Lynn.
And we also invite listener calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. So you'd been on vacation. Can you talk about where you were and why it was such a special place for your family?
Yes. We were in Sri Lanka, on the southeastern coast of Sri Lanka, at a national park. I was born in Sri Lanka and lived later in London. My husband was English. We had two sons. They were aged 8 and 6.
And you still had family in Sri Lanka.
And my parents lived in Sri Lanka. So this was December. It was Christmas holidays. And we'd just gone to visit my parents and take a vacation at this very beautiful resort, remote national park, where it was kind of by the ocean, scrub jungles, eagles and all of that.
Did you see the ocean rising at a certain point?
I didn't. Well, I did. What I saw was I was chatting to a friend at the I was at the door of my hotel room talking to a friend, and she looked behind me and she said, "Oh my God, the sea's coming in." And this was a beautiful morning, a very regular kind of Sri Lankan morning, sunshine. And when I look back, all I saw was a lot of froth and foam of a very large wave rising up.
Was there a loud noise?
There was no noise, and I really thought nothing of it at first. I thought it was, you know, nothing. I just thought this wave was going to recede.
But then when you realized it wasn't, you ran with your husband and your sons and got into a Jeep, but the car was flooded with water. And your account of getting swept away is breathtaking. What was it like to write about that? I'd imagine that it had to be almost as awful as the experience itself.
It was. You know, I partly wrote about it to try and understand what happened, because being in that water was so bewildering. It was such chaos, and it was so a mythical experience almost, and terrifying. But more than terrifying, just bewildering. And I wrote about it to try and understand what happened. So, yes, I did have to put myself right back in the wave to write about it.
What happened when the water finally receded? Did you know where you were?
No, it was actually before the water receded. I clung onto a branch. I was being tossed about in this water for, I think, now a good 20 minutes or so. And I was taken all the way inland and back out again. And just before the wave went back into the ocean, I saw this branch ahead of me and I clung on. And then, you're right, it receded instantly after.
And then when you returned there after the tsunami, what did you find?
Oh, I went back to that place 6 months after with my father-in-law, my husband's father, who'd come down from London. And it was a scene of absolute devastation. It was just rubble, and it had been razed, you know. It's almost like it was nothing except the floor of the hotel and mounds of rubble. And we were stumbling along there, around there, and I was completely dazed and stunned.
But you did find some.
And my father-in-law, yeah, he found a piece of paper that was from a report. My husband, I'm an economist, and my husband was an economist too. And it was the back of a report written by him.
There's often a sense of survival guilt when something like this happens. You survived and those others died. And is that, you think, why you actually had suicidal thoughts for a while, then drank heavily?
Not so much guilt. I think the suicidal thought was, you know, my world had ended and I was so terrified and so agonized and so tormented. I wanted to die. You know, everyone, my family, the five people I loved most in the world had died, and I wanted to die. And that was really the brain. I saw no other way out.
But you did live with other members of your family in Colombo after that. And they helped you get over your grief?
They really watched me. They watched me for a long period so that I couldn't harm myself. And they were so devoted and they watched me. And I guess, and then I moved to New York a couple of years later.
How long before you were able to talk about what happened and how you felt?
I could relay the events of what happened almost instantly. On that first night when I came back, and people asked me what happened, I was able to talk about what happened.
Well, you are very honest about your self-destructive and erratic behavior during the first year. It's not always the most flattering portrayal you could have made of yourself. Was that hard to write about, so frankly?
To be honest, those were the easy bits to write about. And I was, in a way, if I was writing, there was pointless. It was pointless writing if I wasn't going to be frank about it. And that was, you know, that was how it was. And I just wrote about how it was.
We have a call from Dwayne from, where are you from, Dwayne?
I'm in
Montclair. Okay. You've read the book?
I'm about three quarters of the way through it, and I really couldn't help but pick up the phone and call because I don't think I've ever read a book like it. The courage, the honesty, the grief, it's been just tremendously moving, and I wanted to call and I guess express my sorrow for you and the loss of what I'm learning to be as an absolutely phenomenal family and
Thank
kids.
You.
And my question is, I'm learning from the book. I'm learning about grief, and it's a tremendous read. How are you feeling? How did this book change the grief that you were going through and probably will for some time? Did you achieve in the book what you were hoping to when you set out to start writing it?
No, Dwayne, of course, you're asking the question I was going to ask later in this interview, but it's perfectly fine to ask it now. Sonali?
Thank you, Dwayne. I didn't set out to write a book. I set out to write for myself to try and understand what happened to me, just as I said before, what happened to me first in the water. And over time, I wrote to, because in the face of this kind of sudden and impossible trauma, my reaction was to try and distance myself or kind of shut away my family and not feel them and think about them and kind of really rip away all details of them. And I began to write really to bring them close, because my method of dealing with it, of shutting them away, was also very painful. And I wrote to really to gather the threads of my life and our life and bring them close. And that process obviously continues all the time.
Well, economists are notorious for writing in jargon. Did you have to adjust your writing style?
Oh, yes. I had to really kind of, find my voice and write I had to learn to write that way.
Not only had you lost your family, but you also had to let go of your own home in Colombo, the place you had grown up. And you wound up harassing the family that had moved into your parents' house. Why did you feel compelled to do that?
I felt compelled to do that because this was very early on. It was 6 months after the wave, and my parents' house was rented out, and that house I felt was our home, and it was my home, but more than that, I felt it was my children's home in Colombo. And though we lived in England, we always tried to give my boys a sense of being Sri Lankan as well as English. And I had barely visited that house, gone back to it, and on the one hand, I couldn't bear going in, and I didn't want to go back in. I'd just made a very brief visit. On the other hand, I wanted to go back in, and when I heard people had moved in, and what propelled me really was that I can't have anybody there, that my kids had just, their footprints are still fresh in there, and I didn't want anyone kind of polluting that house. And then I went on this campaign to terrorize this family. It was a Dutch family who'd moved in there by pretending to be ghostly and being a ghost and so on. So.
When you look back at that time, do you still recognize the person you were?
I recognize it, but of course, you know, it doesn't. I'm not propelled to do the same kind of act now.
Well, you weren't thinking straight. You were so
yes,
much
I
in
was.
Pain.
Yes, I was in such pain. But
we'll continue our conversation. Invite your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lipkin. People have been writing in, and I'll read some of those comments about the book, a national bestseller called Wave, now available in paperback from Vintage, Sonali Dhiraniagala's very moving memoir, chosen one of the 10 best books of the year by the New York Times last year. Stay with us for more. We're back with Sonali Dhiraniagala's book Wave, the selection for this month's Leonard LoPage Show Book Club. It is now available in paperback from Vintage. How long was it before you were able to return to London, where you'd lived and where you still had that house that you have just talked about?
It was 4 years after the Wave that I first went back to London for the first time.
It had been, I'm sure, the house was unchanged. The only difference was the people who filled it were no longer filling.
That's right. And my friends in London had, I told them, you know, when I first thought I'd never go back to the house, and over time I decided to go back. And it was my process of writing that partly made me want to go back to the house. And when I went in with my friend, and it was completely unchanged. You know, they'd had it cleaned and stuff before I arrived, but it was as if we'd just stepped out. It was quite, you know, we left the house the day before, a week before Christmas, so there were piles of Christmas presents on the floor, and it was the toys in the playroom, and it was the newspapers from 4 years ago on the newspaper rack.
And causing more pain, I assume.
It was agony for a few moments, but then the familiar was so soothing that it really made me cohere, and it was much less painful than I thought.
Many listeners wrote in to say they loved your book, but Janelle left some questions for you on our show page. She asked, why did you begin writing about your experience? You've answered this question, actually. You said you started out just to work it out for yourself. But she also asked, in your grief, do you remember the point, if it was a point, when you realized that you would survive emotionally or decided to survive emotionally?
I think it's incremental. I don't think there is a point where you survive emotionally, where I didn't survive emotionally. And I think, you know, for many years it was taking the next day as it came and the next day, and it was very much a process rather than a point.
And that's one of the things that makes this book so moving. Despite being about such a difficult subject, it shows your processes for coming to terms with your loss and remembering the wonderful life that you had with your sons and with your husband. When you were writing it, I am assuming you were reliving all of that.
Oh, I was very much reliving all of that. And in a way, I had to bring them to life for myself by writing and by really searching for the details and by hunting details of us and them.
And the
I
words.
Kept them close. Yes.
I would think that finding the right words, it's really hard to write about love.
Yes.
Was it comforting to write down the memories of cooking lamb with Steve and listening to Vic talk about cricket and birds or holding Molly in your lap?
Of course, it was very comforting. It was, you know, of course, it was a piercing comfort. It was a piercing agony to the comfort. But just remembering Vikram smashed next door's windows with his cricket ball, for instance, you know, it's also joyful and comforting and sustaining.
And now you also live in New York. What brought you here?
I came here originally to visit a cousin who lived here, and I began to see a therapist in New York, and I stayed for that reason and because I started teaching at Columbia, and my writing happened only in New York, so New York became the place I wrote the book, and I needed to be here. So.
And now that you have not only written a book, but written a book that everybody says is gorgeously written, are you thinking of yourself as a writer? Or are you still working as an economist?
I still work as an economist. I might write. I don't know about that. But I do work as an economist, yes.
We have some calls coming in. And let's go now to Barry from Manhattan. Hi, Barry. You're on the air.
Hi. My question is, at the end of the book, in the acknowledgments, the author states that the book could not be written without the help of her psychotherapist. And I wonder if you could speak at all about that process and how the therapy was a help to write about something so painful.
Thanks, Barry. Yes, the writing actually was initially my therapist's idea. And he said, look, you know, I would talk to him and he would say, you should write about it. I would say, oh, no, I could never write about it. What nonsense. I don't want to live, let alone write anything. But he did persuade me gradually. And a lot of the issues I explore in the book were issues that I'd explored with him. I talk about my feeling of shame for being this outlandish, grief-stricken person, you know, a person who really no one I thought could relate to because my grief was such an outlier.
But people did understand.
People did wonderfully. But all these, you know, a lot of the issues I dealt in the book, or just talking about my children and the memories of them, were things I was first safe to talk to him about, and then I went and explored it in my writings.
MB left a comment on our show page. This book reminded me of the one written by Joan Didion. Have you read her books, The Year of Magical Thinking or Blue Nights?
Yes, I've read both. Yes, definitely.
You read them as a way of understanding how other people
dealt with their grief? I did, yes. The Year of Magical Thinking came out about a year or two after tsunami, and I did read that, and I liked it very much.
Have you heard from other people who lost loved ones in the tsunami?
I hear from people all the time. I've heard from a few people who lost loved ones in the tsunami, but I hear from people with all kinds of loss all the time, and it's very affirming, and if the book does kind of help, it's, you know, I'm very pleased about that.
Well, Nancy asks, what would you offer to others who have experienced such profound losses? What did you find especially helpful? Are there steps in your recovery that you wish you had done differently?
The wishing I'd done differently is very hard to answer. But in terms of what I found helpful, I think for my to keep me alive is that to keep memory close. And that's really also what my book's about, that love never dies. And if you allow love to be sustained and keep memory close to you and keep the preciousness of memory alive, I think that's what worked for me.
Well, you talked about some of the reasons you came to New York, and I would assume that one of them is that it was still painful for you to be in the places that you'd lived with the people you lost. This was an opportunity to start fresh in a place where you may have known some people, but not in the same way.
Definitely. It was also a place where I could access my family and memories of them with some distance. And so not so much as starting afresh, but I could access them. I could be here and then kind of search and seek out the memories and reach out for the memories. Or even when I went back to my house in London, I'd go spend a week and I could come here and lick my wounds and process and kind of hold what I experienced.
So when you go back to your London home, is it still painful?
It's lovely now. It's much less painful. And it's very much my home as well as theirs now.
And you still go back to Colombo as well?
I do as well, yes.
But you're not bothering anybody who's living
in the
old family?
I'm not harassing anybody. No.
I asked you earlier about whether you ever considered becoming a writer because this book has gotten such a fabulous reception. I'm sure that made you feel very good. But is that an encouragement for you to continue to think about writing?
It's a huge encouragement, yes. And also the writing kept me alive and it sustained me over these last. It's my 10th year without them. And the writing has really sustained me. So to that extent, yeah, I'd like to continue, yes.
One more from a listener. Taylor asks, I'm wondering how you want to be responded to when, within casual conversation, elements of your story arise. What do you most hate to hear? Is there anything that can be said which you find acceptable, or do you prefer people just leave it entirely alone?
I think anything's acceptable. I'm not offended. And people find it really hard to respond to. If I drop the story on them, they find it very hard to respond. And I don't hold that against anybody.
Well, my experience when I had something terrible happen to me was that people told me about their thing that happened to them.
Yes.
And I felt that it was an attempt to almost diminish my experience. My experience was my experience, and their experience, as terrible as it was their experience.
Yes.
But it was almost like saying, well, you know, it's not that bad. We all have problems.
I know. It's sometimes quite endearing. I had an elderly next-door neighbor when I went back to London for the first time, and she saw me and she said, oh, Sonali, something terrible happened to me. She said to her, you know, I was in hospital. I said, oh, that's really terrible. And so that was her way of reaching out to me.
What kind of work are you doing now? Is it in economics or are you working
disaster
recovery at all?
Yes, not disaster recovery, but I'm an economist who works on issues of disaster recovery. I teach a course at Columbia on economics of economic development and disasters, and I research the economics of recovery.
Well, Sri Lanka is recovering from more than the tsunami. It had a disastrous civil war. What is the situation today?
There's a lot of reconstruction going on the one hand. It's slow, but so economically it's recovering in some ways. Politically, there's more repair to be done.
Sonali Duraniagala, her book, Wave, Unforgettable, said Cheryl Strayed when she reviewed it in the New York Times. It's now available in paperback from Vintage. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Leonard.